Welcome to the Media Nerds Podcast. I'm Dan Vadebonker.
And I'm Kenton Larson.
How's your summer vacation going, Kenton?
It's very good. We're doing Media Nerds Podcast. So Indiana Jones is not a Star Wars nerds topic.
No, yeah, I said media. Did I say Media Nerds or Star Wars nerds? What did I say?
You said media.
That's what I said. So that's why you... Okay.
Yeah. I'm saying, are you saying...
I am saying it's not a Star Wars topic, yes.
But are you saying that Indiana Jones is not Star Wars related?
It's Star Wars adjacent. A Star Wars adjacent, still owned by Lucasfilm. Let's define that. Let's define how closely. I mean, really, it is like the only other thing that Lucasfilm has going for it other than Willow, which it doesn't, by the way. Willow's been, I heard it was being taken off of Disney+.
It's gone.
Yeah. What the hell? Like, they're not even going to like leave it up there for anybody who might want to watch it. That's kind of disturbing.
Having watched it, it's shitty.
So I know it was.
It's bad.
What is with that? That is actually maybe a topic for a future episode, because there was also that Grease spinoff series that apparently was pretty good, but got yanked, and now it's completely off the platform. I think it was Paramount Plus. So this is kind of, So what is going on is that the content is not permanent. It's just kind of willy-nilly going and coming and going, and people are not going to stick with you if that's what you're doing with your seasons, right?
That's the problem with streaming. You don't own it. Unless you, I guess I saw there's some folks online who burn movies off of streaming services still. So they'll always have it.
Okay.
Kind of thing. If you want to go to the trouble, I guess it can be done. but most people aren't willing to go to the trouble. So stuff disappears and that's it.
I think I found a couple of those at the thrift store the other day. I was going out there and I found a couple. It was Schindler's List. It was actually Schindler's List, and it had a color cover that was replicated the Schindler's List cover, but you open it up and it was a burned DVD with Schindler's List spelled incorrectly, S-H-I-N-D, Schindler's List on the DVD. I'm like, what is this? But it was a couple of them like that. So I think that somebody just donated their DVDs to the thrift store and nobody looked through them. So anyway.
That's a particularly bad film to pirate when you think about the message of the film.
Yes, like, you're exactly.
Like, I didn't learn anything from it, except I'm going to burn 10 billion copies and try to make a profit on the suffering of people depicted in the film. Brutal.
Yeah.
You should have bought it just as a memento.
I actually got a pretty good haul from the thrift store. I'll post that on TikTok probably later today.
Any pirates? Any pirated?
No pirated. I have received a few, though. One time I got, I think it's my, do I have it here? My copy of Phantom of the Paradise. The only reason I bought it is because it has this. You can tell it was at Movie Village because it has this little premiere. So that's a Movie Village thing. Anytime I see something that has like video store stuff on it, I like to get that. But look, it's a burned disc, Phantom of the Paradise. So I mean, I still love the movie. I actually also own it on VHS. So I don't care. But yeah, I guess I have to really buy this on DVD though, an actual one.
Well, it feels better having the official coloring and lettering and every, like the official merch.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a whole, like, I'm sure there's like a special edition with awesome packaging and stuff I could probably find. Anyway, okay, we're going to talk about Indiana Jones. We've both gone to see it in the theater. Kenton, was this your first time in the theater in a while?
Oh, yeah, in a very long while.
Like since the last Star Wars movie, maybe?
I'm just trying to think. I don't think I've gone to a movie since pre-pandemic. I might be wrong. There might have been one that sneaked in there. But I think for all intents and purposes, let's say since 2019.
Okay. Which would have been the Star Wars movie, which would be Christmas 2019 was when The Rise of Skywalker came out.
Is that true?
I don't know.
When it came out?
I feel like that might be it.
Yeah, that might be true.
Anyway, so how was let's talk about the theater experience first. How was the theater experience for you, Kendon? How was it going back? Where did you go?
I went to Grant Park.
All right.
And the hands-off nature of people who work at a theater now is still funny when you consider I was an usher. A hands-on usher telling people to get their grimy feet down off chairs and stuff. And so you go to Grant Park, and I didn't see anybody. Until we got, I mean, the guy looks at our QR code and he looked at it and then it was like, oh, I need to use the bathroom. Do I need to show this to you again? He's like, who cares? Like, who cares? Doesn't care. So you find your seats, you put your feet up, because it's that theater that put your feet up next to a stranger theater, which is weird. Feels weird. Yeah. There's a guy in a bed.
There's a guy with your feet are inches away from somebody's head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you're like, you know that he can. I'm like, I've been sweating in these shoes all day. And you know he can smell them.
And there's a right. And there's a guy sitting next to me who's like in, you know, it's a basically a bed we're sharing.
Yeah.
So he's got his feet up and he's by himself. So that's extra creepy. So once that started, and the only other thing that surprised me is you can buy a shout out to people on the screen. Like you can buy while you're buying your ticket, it says a shout out costs extra and they'll run it on the screen. And there was one where it was like, congratulations, Billy, on your birthday, whatever it was, on your birthday, on the screen for an extra fee. You can get that.
But it gives you the option to do that as you buy your ticket?
Yes, online. As you buy the ticket online, it's like, would you like a shout out for $40?
And you can type whatever you want into it. Well, they must have somebody looking through them though, right?
Oh, yes. I'm sure you can't say, F you, biatches. I'm sure you can't do that or you can't. So they must have somebody.
They must be desperate for that. Get something up in that space.
So there was one, but here's the weird thing. So it's like, happy birthday, Billy. You enjoy Indiana Jones, whatever it is. And there isn't even a murmur in the theater. There isn't even a, yay, that's me. Or Billy, see your name up there. Or look, you went to some, like nothing. Like, it's like Billy didn't show, I think, or something. Like,
or he was in another theater and that just showed in every theater, right?
So who knows? And then my last observation is the sound is so loud. I guess to drown out people who are talking, that's what we've come to. We're just going to crank this thing.
Absolutely.
It was so loud, I actually was missing lines, not because I couldn't hear them, because they were so loud. Because it's like,
there's a lot of shouting. Yeah, I noticed that about the movie. There's a lot of shouting going on.
Yes, and it was distorted as a result. Okay. But so, having not gone, but the air conditioner was delightful. The air conditioning was delightful. How about you?
I went last night, actually. Yeah. My girlfriend and I went on a Wednesday night. I thought it was surprisingly full in the theater. We went to the new Junction, the JUNXION. So it was surprisingly full for Wednesday, I thought, given that it's full price. It's not Cheap Tuesdays or anything. A lot of gray hairs in the audience. So a lot of people looking to be nostalgic. You found that as well, yeah?
There's an older male audience who loves Indiana Jones, including me.
Yeah, well, I saw older couples as well, but certainly I think word of mouth is carrying maybe forward. We'll talk about what we think about the movie, but word of mouth is positive, I think, for this so far.
Yeah, I think
some people are wanting to go see it. So that was something I noticed. Something about policing behavior. I wrote this down because, your job as an usher used to be to walk around. If somebody was talking or disturbing other people, you would say, psst, shut up, right?
And it was accepted. It was accepted that that's your job and people listen to you.
Yes. And that was everybody was there to watch the movie. So you would not be disrespectful to other people. Now, that is not the case. And I had a person talking it up beside me the entire time and asking questions. And I don't get that part. What's going on under here? And they were just discussing everything. And it's very clear that, and it's, I think it's possibly the design of the theaters now, because they design them these 2-person pods, basically. So they want, you're there to go see it with one other person and that's it. So the collective audience experience is gone. Right. So I did not feel that at all when I went to see this. And it was a fairly, I would say, 3/4 full, the theater last night. So that was a bit of an issue. But it was otherwise it was fine. Like the experience, the sound. I didn't notice that thing about the lines, but I know it was loud. Absolutely.
Oh, it was loud. Yeah. It's very loud.
Yeah. So that is an issue. And the talking was, man.
You got lots of talking?
Yeah, well, just this is one, the people behind me just kept going. And it was funny because during the commercials, because there's a lot of commercials, right? And I love the, they had like, here's our short film. And it was a Coca-Cola commercial. It was like these two film students made a Coca-Cola commercial that they're now showing in front of everybody. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff. But then there was some kind of argument happening over seats behind me. This is what the assigned seating thing has gotten us now, because we used to be able to go in there and sit wherever we wanted. But now because we have assigned seats, like, are you sitting here? Are you sitting here? No, I'm here. What is going on over here? And it's just going on in the background. I'm trying to focus on. And I like the previews. Like it was during the previews and I'm trying to see what's going on with here. I want to see what's his name. Oh, shit. What did I see one for? It kind of looked good. It was about AI was the bad guy and that guy from Tenet was in it. Did you see that trailer?
I might have,
It was like, I can't remember the name of the movie.
Shit. Yeah, yeah, neither can I.
But it was like AI. This, it was in a futuristic, yeah. AI was the bad guy. And this guy, John something, oh, what's his name? Washington. Anyway.
The guy from, what was it, Inception?
Tenet.
From Tenet.
The main protagonist. It's because he doesn't have a name in the movie. That's why I don't know what his name is. Anyway, he was in it, and it was a good looking sci-fi movie. So I might go see that. But there wasn't anything. I can't remember anything else in trailers that I saw that made me want to go back to the theater.
Well, Mission Impossible comes out.
Come on, I don't care about that.
I know. Yeah, well, you and me both. And to me, it's kind of funny. Like Mission Impossible is like, let's show you every action sequence before you see the movie so you can see how involved Tom Cruise is. And it's like, hey guys, you're spoiling every piece, every action set piece you have spoiled for us now by showing Tom Cruise's involvement in the process. We get it. He's involved. He's doing the stunts. Fantastic. Let us be surprised.
Yeah, I know. This would be so much better if you just didn't show it to us and let us see it as it happens on screen. For sure. I didn't watch any of that stuff, and I don't care about Tom Cruise. So, but I have been watching. Did you watch all the Indiana Jones movies before, by the way? All four?
I thought I own them, and I thought about it, but I decided not to. I made an active decision not to, only because I just wanted to be sort of swept up by it and not. Oh. I didn't want any preconception. I don't know if you agree with this, but I thought going in that the best this movie could be is better than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. There's no way in hell it's going to beat the first three movies. It's just not going to happen. How can you? Yeah. I just don't, without Spielberg and Sean Connery and whatever, I just going in, I was like, it can't be that good. All I hope is it's a little better than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
A little better.
A movie which I didn't hate. Didn't hate like in the way that some people do. Like I didn't love it either, but I was fine with it. And I liked the fridge. I hate to tell people, but I do like the nuclear fridge. I like it because it's funny, because it's a joke. It's not.
Get that it's a joke. Yeah. It's a stupid joke.
But I think a lot of people who hate it don't know it's a joke. Know it's funny. It's funny. It's them having a laugh with Indiana Jones escaping something that looks impossible.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's funny.
That's something that's interesting. I did watch them all. I did a little series on TikTok where I watched them all, and I've been posting little reviews there, and it's been going well. I find it interesting. I posted those TikToks. I did one for Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it did very well. I expected it to get many more views than usual, than those videos usually get, which is only like maybe 1,000 views at best. And I did the same one for Temple of Doom, but I made a joke in my Temple of Doom video where I said, maybe it's the child slavery, maybe it's the human sacrifice, but there's a lot of unpleasantness in this movie. Like, I made a joke about this, but because I used the phrase child slavery, it probably like quashed it in the algorithm or something stupid like that. That's the kind of stuff that happens on TikTok. So that video has almost no one. It's got like a fraction of the views. And then I did a Crusade one, and that's also up there as well. So that's getting a lot of views. So I haven't done my Crystal Skull. I've already recorded it and made it. I had to kind of do these separately. I wanted to get my thoughts around each movie before I went into Dial of Destiny. So I had recorded it before I went to the movie last night. But my issue with Crystal Skull, I hated it when I saw it. I was so disappointed when I went to the theater. The last time I went to see Indiana Jones in the theater, it was a very, very negative experience for me because I had my hopes up so high for this. I was like, I was expecting the same as I got when from the original series, and it did not deliver in such a horrible way that I just was done with it. I don't think I've ever actually watched it since. I can't remember watching the King, maybe with my kids at some point. I really hadn't. So I came back to it having been away for so long. And yes, it was not as bad as I thought it was. I even didn't mind the nuking the fridge because I got the joke. I understood at this point what it was. But there's still a lot of awkwardness. There's still a lot of like not as much action as the first and third, I would say. And some of the action is still stupid. The monkeys swinging is stupid, and so, you know, there's just dumb stuff in there. Him throwing the snake for him to pull him out of the quicksand, like there's just, and I don't like Shia LaBeouf. I think his character is a bad idea, or his take on the character is a bad idea, or something around that, because it's just an unlikable character. I get what they were going for, but it wasn't a good fit in that cast, I think.
I get all of that stuff, including I thought some of the action sequences are moved rather slowly in Crystal Skull, and you know, the payoff I kind of like, I like the concept of I want to know, and your head blows up because you here's all the knowledge, kaboom, and your head blows up. And I still talk about that in class when I'm like, you got to fill your head. You got to be like Kate Blanchett in Crystal Skull. Your head's got to explode from all the knowledge you're taking in, kind of thing. Awesome. So the theory of what we're watching in Crystal Skull, I like more than maybe the actual execution.
Yeah, I think part of the problem was that they, like at this time, this is George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. Lucas is riding high from the prequels. He's like, yeah. Oh, CGI can make us do, we can do all these things. So I think they had all these great creative ideas that didn't go through the proper kind of vetting and you know, process they usually do, whittling it down or refining it to something better. Because there's a lot of really good things here that didn't get refined. I love that they point out that Indy was a spy during World War II. Yes. We got a taste of that in this new movie. I like that. I would love to see a series, an Indiana Jones series. Yeah. Maybe we'll save that to the end of the podcast. We'll talk about what we want to see this stuff go next.
Yes.
But first, let's get your overall thoughts of Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
All right. My overall thoughts are I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I found it more interesting than I thought I would. Like there toward the end of the movie where there's planes and the clouds and I found myself going, where are we going with this thing? Like I was kind of like, I want to get to the other side of the clouds and see what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Like, so I found myself very interested. Now that said, there's absolutely plot points that I don't know what they're doing there. They don't pay off. In some cases, it's kind of like, it would have been easy to get rid of that, but they didn't. And there's some CGI perfection and missteps in the same film, in the same sequences, which is weird. Like, how can you have a scene where it's perfect and a scene where it's like, whoa, what is that, Play-Doh? like in the same, so I saw some flaws that made me very worried early on, that made me think, oh no. But when I left the theater, I sat there through the credits enjoying John Williams' music, maybe for the last time. Yeah. And I left there singing the song and just being happy. I saw Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones one more time. So I liked the film. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. I had that feeling as well. I'd also was singing the song as I left the theater, and it was nice to see him again as Indiana Jones. That is the best part of all this, is that he's still kicking. He's still able to do it at 80 years old. And I mean, I know a lot of that was a stunt double. And certainly the first 20 minutes of the film was a stunt double with his face on. And they have done they've come a long way with that technology. We're a long way from plasticine Tarkin. But at the same time, I'm sitting there thinking in my head, I know what this is. I know this isn't really Harrison Ford. This is just a recreation, which even makes me want to see it. I just want to see somebody else do it at this point who can actually do it. Because I think it's something that you recognize in those first films that Harrison Ford was really doing this shit. Like all these crazy stunts. Well, maybe he didn't do all these crazy stunts, but someone actually did all these crazy stunts. Whereas you know that a lot of the stuff is CGI in this new one, right? So it's kind of not quite as satisfying to watch. And it was in the back of my head a little bit as I was watching it. I enjoyed it. I was not thinking about this stuff. Like, I enjoyed the story. I didn't like the bad guys immediately. There's something about it. Mads Mikkelsen was fine. He does what he does well. But those other two guys I did not like at all. I don't like the actor who played, like, the guy who was like, I'm going to kill everybody guy. Like, the crazy guy who just arbitrarily kills somebody. I don't like a bad guy that does that. I think it's boring. And it doesn't. It's like, oh, what are we supposed to be scared of this guy now? Because he's just going to kill everybody. Well, then he just kills everybody. So what? Like, that just means nothing to me. So that was a bit of an issue. And the other guy was just this big, dumb muscle guy who didn't do anything except be a dumb muscle guy, right? So there was no point to that either. So I didn't like that.
Yeah,
and And the plot points, I by the end of it, I walked out of the theater going, what did the dial do again?
How do you set the dial? How do you set it?
I know Mads Mikkelsen said something as that dial was turning. And he's like, it's going to do this and it's measuring this. And it's like, I don't know what you just said and I don't understand what's happening here. Right? So, there was that too. And I felt some of the chase scenes were a bit contrived. Like the riding the horse through the parade scene was not necessary. I think they just wanted that shot for the trailer of Harrison Ford on a horse with like ticker tape behind him, but there's no real purpose for that.
Well, I thought I agree. And there's one of my least favorite CGI shots. And there's no reason it needs to be when we look down at the parade and we see people marching. And it just looks like claymation. And I went, what does that do? And then right away, but then it won me back. And I'll tell you the part that made me laugh out loud, which I wasn't expecting, is we see the three astronauts in the parade, and they turn and they're like, then they're like, WTF? And that just cracked me up. I'm like, oh, I didn't think we're actually going to see them in the parade. And it's funny because you see them look at Indiana Jones like.
But I think he turns and looks at them and hey, there's the astronauts. Like, here's what everybody's coming to see. He's got to see them too, right? So,
I sort of forgave. Like some, but because you're right, the guy on the horse doesn't fully look like Indiana. Doesn't look like Harrison Ford. And there's a few things in that sequence that don't come together. And you're right. There's no real reason it needs to be in there other than to set the time period. The film does a good job of setting the time period, but it's almost heavy-handed.
I think it is
Magical Mystery Tour. And the kid in the astronaut outfit on the subway, which I like very much. It's a cute little scene. But there's so much stuff laid out in terms of where we're at, and what era we're living in, et cetera. But I agree with you on everything you've said so far. I agree with you on.
What did you think about the ultimate fate of Shia LaBeouf's character?
I thought it was interesting and gave us a little more gravitas, but is it a replacement for seeing him? If we can go to the past.
Oh, God.
If we can flashback, which we did.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would have been a welcome thing to see him in this film in some way. I do think that his character not surviving the war makes sense, added a level of gravitas and sadness to the film that helped it, I think, in a certain way. And made the last scene in the film, it touched me, the last scene in the film. Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why that's the case. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think that was, the first I'm like, oh, okay, I see what they did there. They just killed him off in Vietnam. But then when you realize I didn't like that they started with him being divorced from Marion. I kind of, the divorce thing, maybe hits too close to home, but I'm just not loving that trope. And so he's
it's sad seeing that little.
But I was thinking the point of it was to see him at his lowest, right? Like he's like 80, he still has to teach this. I'm sure you can relate to that part of it.
Oh yeah, being
a retiring professor. He's only been at that university for 10 years. Nobody really cares about him there because he hasn't been at the one he was teaching at before. And yeah, so he's kind of living in a crappy apartment and not really having a great life. That's where we see him. And then they kind of go from there. Now we have his goddaughter. We have, what's her name again? I should get the names right.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Thank you. From Fleabag.
What's her name in the movie? I don't remember.
Oh, it's Helena. He says it all the time. Helena. Okay.
What's her last name?
I don't know.
Jones?
No, she's the daughter of the guy, Toby, what's his face? He's in all the Marvel movies and the guy that shows up in everything. He is the and this happens, this is one thing that I notice when I'm watching all of them in the best movies, meaning the first and the third movies, the opening sequence has really nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
In the all the other ones, the opening sequence that leads directly into the rest of the movie. So this opening sequence, we have him trying to get this part of this dial, and he's there with his partner. And Mads Mikkelsen is also there trying to get, he's a Nazi. We're back to the Nazis being the bad guys, which I think is a good thing. I didn't think the Russians were a great bad guys because there's nothing inherently wrong with communism, Kenton. Russians, nobody will get behind that name. People might get behind Russians as bad guys for other reasons, but not because they're communists, right? Nazis are always going to be the bad guys. Nazis are always good bad guys.
Yeah, well, and they're perfect for Captain America and Indiana Jones. That's for sure, as we've learned. Like, those are the best stories. And I also think there's a modern day tie-in to Nazism where we see stuff online and whatnot. And I think, so I also think, thought it was a plot line worth revisiting in a modern era at the same time. Oh, one quick thing. And that is the train sequence. This is the second Indiana Jones movie that starts with a train sequence. And I couldn't help but think to myself, if River Phoenix had not died, because nobody complained about his portrayal of young Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade. People love him. in that opening scene. And I love that. Probably he would have played the younger Harrison Ford on the train at the beginning of this movie if he would have lived. And how, just like, oh, like sort of that awful thing that happens when an actor dies, and you can see what the opportunity would have been and probably what would have happened as a parallel thing.
Yeah, I think I'm sure they picked him because he played Harrison Ford's son in like the Mosquito Coast or something like that.
Right.
And they do look alike, and he played a great Indiana Jones.
Oh, so good.
And there was a series too. There was an Indiana Jones series based on that. They love that opening sequence so much it inspired a TV series, but did not last very long, I don't think.
I watched the series when it was on. It was like very low budget. You know, it wasn't like I remember watching it and going, no, I want movie quality.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You can't get that. You couldn't get that on TV back then. You can now, though. Yeah. You can definitely get that now. Now, I agree. And I like I don't say I like the Nazis' plan, but I liked the plan that we eventually see happening. Mads Mikkelsen's plan is pretty good for this kind of thing. It's what you would expect the Nazis to come up with, given the situation, given a dial that apparently points to fissures in time and space that happen apparently all over. No explanation as to how all these things happen, right? Fissures in time and space happen. We're just going to accept that. And this dial points to where it is. And Archimedes invented it back in ancient Rome days, or ancient Greece, right? Sorry, ancient Greece. So that was... That is the premise of this. And so they spend their time. Now, one thing I've definitely noticed over this watching these series is that these films, Lucas and Spielberg are the masters of the MacGuffin, of the thing that everybody wants. It's the Ark. It's the stone in the Temple of Doom. It's the Grail in the third one. So the MacGuffin in this case, there's two parts of MacGuffin that change hands. There's also a tablet thing they have to get. I don't remember what that thing's called, but it's like a square.
Oh, yeah.
Right, they have to find to translate.
They have to melt the wax.
Yeah, and I loved all that stuff. Like that stuff, I really enjoyed all that kind of. That was a good Indiana Jones content. Like that whole following the treasure and all that stuff was great. But I did have an issue with like how the dial actually works and how this is all coming together. I think there's a little bit. They're a little fuzzy on those details.
Yeah, I thought. I mean, it would be probably hitting the nail too hard on the head to show the years on the dial or something like that.
Right.
I was surprised by the Nazis' plan. I'm going to kill Hitler because he was weak, but I'm going to perfect the Nazis, what the Nazis got wrong the first time. And I was a little surprised by that plan, but then it kind of makes sense when you see when you see Mads Mikkelsen kind of go like, but I have the plan. I've planned for this all these years since the war ended, and I just got to go back and then execute my plan.
Well, it's a little self-centered to think that he can be the one to fix it. And I'm surprised that he would do that, because I think that is he going to go in there and impersonate Hitler, or is he just going to say, I'm better than Hitler, and everyone's going to accept that? Like, I think if you killed Hitler at that point, he was about to kill Hitler right before the beginning of the war. And I think that would end the war. I think everything would fall apart at that point. I don't know that would continue. But wouldn't you want to get him out, like kill him, make it look like the Americans did it or something in the middle of the war before they start losing? And that will rally the troops. And then they'll have some kind of, like, he'll have knowledge of all their movements, and he'll use some kind of, I would rather see that kind of more intricate plan as far as messing with the timeline. But certainly, you know, we learn that it's not like a time machine. It's just a thing that points them in the right direction.
I think so. And I think there's an implication that that's the only place you can go with this machine, because Archimedes
He built it to show people how to get, to get help. And we're spoiling everything, of course. This is supposed to be on the thing, but in the end, the plane goes back in time to ancient Greece, to fly. And that was awesome. That was so cool to see that.
Yes.
You know, to see what was, holy God, they're in like this is the Battle of Syracuse, and you see all the flames and the catapults and everything. That was great. And then, to see the plane flying over it. But again, I didn't like, that character who kept just like shooting it all. I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you shooting back at these people? Are you an idiot? Yeah. Like, I didn't like that guy at all. He just annoyed me every time he was on screen.
The henchman didn't bring much to the table in terms of plot-wise or anything else, other than they're just his cronies.
And I found What's-Her-Name's character to be a bit frustrating in that she's always back and forth a little too much. And you're really not sure to trust her, because she's betrayed him several times in the film. I think she actually went against him.
I didn't dislike her character as much as I thought I could. I thought she's a little different than other sidekicks we've seen. She's untrustworthy by her own admission. Like, it's all about selling stuff and making money every chance that you get. And so I thought, like, that she played that role well. Like, at no time did I think, like, I think now if you were to do Temple of Doom again with the Kate Capshaw character, people would be complaining about her and saying she's
painful. Was the worst part of the whole experience, I have to say, of watching all these movies again, is her character in that film is possibly the worst character ever written. I cannot believe that all she cares about is jewels and having sex with Indiana Jones, and that's really it. And screaming every time she sees some kind of bug or something. That's what it is. It's a horrible character.
There's no romance for Indiana Jones and Phoebe Waller together.
No. I'm glad they let that go. Right. And I'm glad I like the way they brought it together at the end.
Yeah.
And she also brings along with her own version of Short Round, this other kid, who's like, she kind of adopted him, and they've been living together and making do ever since. And I like that kind of a thing. It was kind of an Artful Dodger Oliver situation going on there, where they're kind of working the cons themselves and trying to figure stuff out. So that was interesting. And they were good characters. I like those parts of the movie for sure.
I like both of the actors. I think the kid, to some extent, didn't have, like, he was wasted a little. They needed somebody to fly the second plane.
Well, that was
and that was a plot contrivance. That was one of those plot contrivances. Oh, the other one that I'll just mention at the same time that I thought it doesn't pay off and it didn't need to be in there. And that was maybe it was just a nod to Harrison Ford's portrayal of Richard Kimball in The Fugitive, but where he makes the phone call, he's got blood on his hands, and he makes the phone call, you see a news report saying police are after Indiana Jones for the murder, and you're like, what's this? And so he's on the run, like, but that nothing happens with that.
For the murder of the three people that the other guy killed, right?
Right.
And they think, that's so stupid. That was dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, and the 80-year-old archaeology guy killed them. Like,
and why?
None of it, like, and it didn't pay off in any way. They cleared his name, we assume.
Right, because they had all these other people. Oh, no, those people got left in the past, though. I didn't like whatever that was supposed to be, the CIA or whatever that was at the beginning, and that female, she was a great actress, but you cannot tell me that there's going to be a female black CIA agent in 1969 America. There's no way that's the case.
1969, right? I think there would be, but would she be in with the Nazis? Was she aware of that? Is she aware of that plan?
I don't think she was. I don't think any of the whoever these Americans were that were working with Mads Mikkelsen.
Right.
The story is Mads Mikkelsen's like Werner von Braun. He gave them all the technology to go to the moon. Now he wants this, that, and the other thing. And he snubs the president. There's all that stuff. That didn't seem necessary either, right? All that stuff was weird. I don't know. I forgot about all that.
There's things to be trimmed with the plot. No doubt about that.
I didn't like that Sala was a cab driver in New York. Come on, you got to make Sala a cab driver. That guy has had incredible adventures with Indiana Jones. And that's how he's going to end his life. It's just like retired in New York, you know?
Yeah. I think that was an attempt to speak to the immigrant experience and potentially that was an attempt to do that. I know what you're saying.
Yeah,
but they needed to get him there. They needed to get Sala to New York.
That was nice. I did perk up when I saw him. That was nice to see John Rhys Davies. Yeah,
God, he was great. And I thought he could have gone. He even suggested that he could.
He wanted to go. Yeah, he's like, I've got my passport.
And I was like, part of me was like, yeah, sure, why not? But then I thought, you bring him along, and he's dead. He's a dead man.
That's true. That's true. Right, they only could have one geezer along on this ride, and it was Indiana Jones.
That is right.
I did love that he was singing Gilbert and Sullivan as he was walking away. They did make sure there was a part where he did that. I love that as well. So that was nice.
Yeah.
There were some good nods.
How long did it take you to realize that was Antonio Banderas?
Oh, immediately.
It took me a couple scenes. I was like, oh.
No, immediately I knew who it was.
Well, he's got
He was nice, too. I was upset that he got killed. I didn't like that.
Yeah. You know, I wanted him to live on, too. I thought he had more to offer. And he was unrecognized. He's lost weight, and he's wearing a C-cap, I think, when we first see him. I was like, who's this guy? And
he's
then
done
I
a lot
realized,
of character work.
Yeah.
in the last couple of years. So he's learned to kind of transform himself a bit more as he ages.
His character doesn't really come to much in the film, but it's good to see him. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also, I also wondered about Mads Mikkelsen picks up his binoculars. He goes, there they are. Like, and like, so that was a little bit like, oh, okay, well, it's too bad. Like, because if they just would have got away from him, that would have been
the they're going east, not west. Like, I don't know. That was weird. Yeah.
Right. There, like, there's a couple things like that that rely a little too much on, we need this to happen or we need that to happen.
Yeah. And I think the biggest one, of course, is the kid flying the plane as he follows them into the thing. But really, how else are they supposed to get back to the future? Right. It's the real, like, they had to crash that plane, I guess, in the past. Although, doesn't somebody find that at some point? All these, this wreckage from this plane, and I don't know. They left a lot of loose threads there.
Well, you needed to get back, so you needed two planes. The guy sleeping in the back of the plane was convenient.
Why do they need to have planes at all, Kenton? Why couldn't they have done this on land and had the portal be on land and they just drive through it with a car or something?
Yeah, that occurred to me.
Right, I think that was done for a specific type of shot. They wanted, I mean, the shot of the bomber going into that was really cool, but that's all for that? No, I don't know.
Well, it's because we want an aerial shot of the battle they see when they're coming in.
That was very cool as well,
It was very cool. And when I saw it, I was like, at first, you don't quite see it. You're like, what is it? You're craning your neck trying to see where they went. And then you're like, whoa, holy. And when you actually see it, it looks like a great scene from a historical.
From Troy.
Yes, it looks great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was so excited by that. And I also like Archimedes riding on his horse. Come on, let's go.
Let's go check it out. And then there's this one guy who just shows up and gets killed, that one Roman or whatever, that just kind of like tries to attack them. So that was all fun. Were you disappointed that he goes back? Or that she forces him to go back? He didn't want to. Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones wanted to give up and just stay there and probably die. He probably would have died because of infection, because he was shot. I forgot to mention that. That was another thing I didn't like. Yeah. That he was shot for a long, long time. They shot him and then they brought him along with him, and he just sat there and bled for a long time.
Like, how, like, without any indication of how serious a thing his wound was. And so I was worried, it's true. It made us think, just like, I'm worried he's going to be. They're going to arrest him for this crime. And that didn't turn out to be anything. And then I'm afraid that he's going to bleed out and die here. And that kind of didn't amount to anything either. So clarity on those points probably would have helped sort of dispel that kind of stuff. You know what's funny? I actually thought going in, I was not spoiled for this. So I was like just watching it like anybody else. And when they were going through that, all I heard was the ending is bonkers. So you know what I actually had in mind when they were going through there? At first, I was like, they wouldn't do this, would they? Okay, remember when Indiana Jones has a blink and you'll miss it cameo in The Phantom Menace? He's at the pod race.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can see it online. If you go Indiana Jones, Phantom Menace, and you'll see he's at the pod race. He's like walking up the step.
Oh.
For a second, I thought they were going to transport him to the Star Wars universe. can you imagine how much people would hate that?
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine? Like, people would have just destroyed. Yeah. And so I really thought it was going to be bonkers. I thought it was going to be like, or Indiana Jones meets Jesus as he goes to heaven or something.
Well, these have gradually gotten more and more like tangible as far as the magic or whatever it is involved. Like the original, I mean, I love the original, and it's funny because in all this process, I also came up against the argument that the first Indiana Jones movie is not a good movie because Indiana Jones does nothing to affect the plot. Have you heard this one? From the Big Bang Theory, apparently. And so I posted my first video about Indiana Jones, and I said it was The Raiders of the Lost Ark is a perfect movie.
Yeah.
And this person said, it's not perfect. Indiana Jones does nothing to affect the plot, meaning he doesn't stop the Nazis. They go ahead. It means that he doesn't stop them. They still get the Ark. They still open it. They still die. But that's why it's a good ending. It's like, what else is he going to do? If he stops them, then it's a boring ending. The reason they did it this way is on purpose. So it's a good movie. But people say it's not because he basically is useless throughout the whole thing. Everything that happened in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark would have still happened had he not been involved. Because the Nazis would have gotten it and gone to do it. Anyway, whatever. It's a stupid argument. No.
It's stupid. It is. I think it's a perfect film too.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, the final shot of the warehouse alone.
Yeah.
Is solid. It's been parodied. It's been mimicked. There's a great scene in the Coen Brothers Hudsucker Proxy where you see the warehouse and it's all hula hoops in the warehouse. It's the same shot from Raiders of the Lost Ark. And you're just like, this is an iconic cinema. And I've often said, like, by today's standards, if you look back at Raiders of the Lost Ark, it looks like Casablanca.
Yeah.
Like it looks.
I definitely felt that as I was watching it.
Great, beautiful, classic piece of cinema that you would never see made that way anymore. And it's heartbreaking that that's the case, but it's true.
And I think that's you. Yeah, I think it's part of the reason why those guys didn't try to make this one. I think it would have been worse had Spielberg and Lucas tried to make it because they're not young anymore. They don't have the same ideas they had. They're not willing to take the same risks they did at the time. And the other part of this that I think is important is that there's no, if they had done this, if they had like taken the reins and done it themselves, there would have been no one to rein them in and we would have had another Crystal Skull. That was the problem with Crystal Skull, is that there was no one to rein them in. Because what are you going to do, say no to Mr. Spielberg? Come on. So they had James Mangold direct. He was fine. Like, I don't know. It's these days with directors, you can't really tell whose style is what because it all kind of looks the same. It's all very actiony and that kind of stuff. So overall, I would say this is, I don't know, what do you want? Do you want to rank these or how do you want to?
Well, I mean, we didn't fully talk about the ending, which.
Okay,
which,
fully, yeah, let's talk
and
about
that. I did not know that Karen Allen was in this film. Did
oh,
you?
Oh, no. Yeah, neither did I until I saw her.
And she walks I just thought that was lovely. I thought that was a lovely scene. I know some people don't like Phoebe Waller punching Indiana Jones to bring him back or whatever, knocking him out. But I thought that was an effective way to get him where we needed him to go. And then when I thought the Karen Allen scene was just lovely, they reenacted the part of the, it hurt, you know, where does it hurt from the first film.
That was nice. And, yeah. I like that.
Yeah. I just thought it was very sweet. It like, regardless of these little plot points that we've like dissected, I thought the ending was so nice. It's impossible to leave the theater with anything other than like a nice warm feeling. Yes. Where, by the way, did you see John Wick 4?
I haven't seen any of that. I only saw the first one.
Okay. Because I'm just going to say, I'm not going to spoil John Wick 4 for any folks who are listening. But John Wick 4 is a well-paced, well-plotted film that made me, in which the ending put a negative pall on the rest of the film. Just made me go, what was this even for? What is it? And though the film is very well rated and I enjoyed 99% of it, I kind of left it going, why? Okay, this was like, yeah, you can nitpick the pacing, whatever it is you want to nitpick. You leave the theater and you're feeling good. You feel like you got something out of this. And the last shot, I thought was nice. I thought it gave us a little hope in terms of the character we love. I just thought it was really nice. Touching ending.
They went a little heavy on the hat, I felt, in this one. They did over a bit. There's usually at least one shot of the iconic hat or a shot of him putting on the hat or something. There are a lot in this one. Yeah.
What about the whip? What about the whip? We only had two whip sequences.
We didn't really have a snake sequence. I mean, the eel sequence was terrifying. That whole underwater sequence was terrifying.
Yeah.
But they're not snakes, and I really wanted to see him be afraid of snakes. That is like the key part of an Indiana Jones movie. He was scared of eels, okay? Yeah. Yes, he was scared of the eels, but I don't know.
Anyway. No, you're right. And we had centipedes, like we had stuff.
There were good gross out things. Again, that's another key part of Indiana Jones. There's got to be some kind of gross out part where people are going to get squeamish. And there was that. So what about there's usually a little bit of gore in these movies too. I'm trying to think of what was nothing really gory. I guess they have to keep it PG-13.
The last shot of Mads Mikkelsen is pretty gross.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
We see him laying there. And I almost forgot. I love the sequence where they find Archimedes' tomb and he's wearing the wristwatch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're like, what the F? What are we looking at? We're like, why is he wearing this? And then when you find out it's actually Mads Mikkelsen's wristwatch that you see him putting on in the plane, and you're like, oh, that's great. Like, I was like, I love that. I love, like, just a little touch like that goes a long way. But I thought that, and I think you're right, we could have explained how this thing works a little bit better, I think maybe that's the only place this thing would ever take you. But I also thought Continental Drift, the, you know, the Siege of Syracuse, all this stuff comes up in the last, and at the end of the movie, I'm like, is everybody going to be Googling this or what? Like
the continental drift thing was funny. I'm like, what is he saying? What does that matter? What are you talking about? And I still don't understand how that mattered. How that made them go thousands of years more in the past than, because they couldn't explain it properly.
I just think it was going to go there no matter what.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think that was That was made clear.
He was trying to get Mads Mikkelsen to turn the plane around and it almost worked.
Because he did panic at the last minute, but it was too late. But I would have, like, as soon as I saw where I was, I would have just turned that plane right around and gone right back through that portal. Like, what are you doing? Doing the low passes over the fucking the ships and stuff, man. Get up high, get out of range, and get out of there.
Yeah, you're getting this battalion shooting at you.
But you had to have the Nazis die. Like, you have to have the Nazis die. Overall, another thing I didn't like about it was that there were a lot of people who died unnecessarily, and they thought the body count was particularly high for an Indiana Jones movie. That's not usually a concern. Like, we've seen people, certainly minions and people have died in the past. Temple of Doom is in particular bad for that. But this one had, like, I don't know, like, the executions of the people. I don't think that was necessary. You're right. And the whole thing about him being chased for murder wasn't necessary either. So that part could have come out.
Yeah, there's ways to improve the film. At the beginning of this conversation, I thought, if it's better than Kingdom of Crystal Skull, then that's kind of where we're going with this. And I think it was.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you?
Yeah, I think it was better. But I would go with, like, my favorite is still Last Crusade, then Raiders, then Tomb, and then Crystal Skull is the worst. So that's how I'd rank these.
By the way, I remember when the films came out, Raiders of the Lost Ark was universally praised. Temple of Doom, I remember the whole storyline was, it's too much for kids. It's too much. How can this be a kid's film? People lost their minds. They thought it was too violent for kids when that came out.
Well, I don't understand how you can look at the first movie and think that's a kid's franchise when you have a guy's face melting off. Like,
yeah.
What I know it looked, I know it was CGI, it was claymation and it didn't necessarily look realistic, but it was, and in the moment it did.
Oh, yeah. It's
like terrifying. When I was a kid, I was terrified of that face melting scene. So I don't understand how you can look at that and think that that's meant for kids. But I guess kids liked it, like Star Wars. Kids liked it and they just went with that, right?
Yeah. And Last Crusade, I just want to point out, people hate, I remember critics savaging it when it came out.
Really?
Going, are you telling me that Indiana Jones is going to bicker with his dad? And I remember them tearing apart the River Phoenix train scene and going, oh, yes, we need an origin to why he's afraid of snakes. Oh, we need an origin to him using a whip. Oh, this is, like, it's all so heavy-handed and terrible. And now this movie comes out, everyone's like, Last Crusade is the best film. It's the best one of the whole bunch. I was like, boy, have things ever changed in 40 years, you know?
That's,
like,
interesting. I didn't know that. I remember loving Last Crusade. I remember being, I would have been 13, so I was right on the cusp of, like, all the marketing stuff. I played it on Genesis, the Sega Genesis video game. So all that stuff, I was right into it, and I loved the movie. I also had a friend who was obsessed with it, so I kind of caught the fever from him. So, yeah, Last Crusade is really, really entrenched. And the first one, I just think it's a perfect film, and for what they did for the time. Like, if you think about when that movie was made, George Lucas has just finished Empire Strikes Back. Steven Spielberg is about to walk on the set of E.T. Like, these two guys are at their peak of filmmaking. So that's why that's such
great
a good
film
movie.
After great film after great film. Yeah. And I would even say, starting with American Graffiti.
Yeah.
And even Spielberg's Duel. Like you can go back, you can take it back even further.
But that's when, like, those are that was the beginning, and then it built and built and built, and that was when they were, like, just firing off cylinders. He was also, Spielberg was also producing, like, Poltergeist and all kinds of other stuff. So,
oh my God, it was crazy. It was and those films still get shown all the time. People still know what they are. Like, they're massive, and there's still a whole generation of filmmakers who grew up with them and who attempt to do what they did in those films, and they just. There's no, you can't replace them.
No,
you can't. They stand the test of time. They're awesome.
Now, I would also say you can't replace Indiana Jones, as in you can't replace Harrison Ford, but I assume they're going to try at some point after Harrison Ford, they're going to give some time and then try and reboot something. It's Hollywood. What do you think they're going to do?
Well, they said this film, unfortunately, isn't doing as well as they thought.
No,
they
it's not. Yeah.
I think it's a marketing problem in that they shouldn't have shown it at the Cannes Film Festival 2 months before the thing came out. I think that's not a place that you want to show the latest Indiana Jones film and then have spoilers coming. Like, I was avoiding, like, trying to see, like, there were all, like, videos would pop up on YouTube, like, spoiler and all, you know, the biggest disappointment in Lucasfilm's history, all of this stuff leading in to going to see it. And I think that had an impact on people. I think they made some mistakes in terms of the way they rolled this film out. I don't know that we're going to see another Indiana Jones, but if we were to see another Indiana Jones, I still want Harrison Ford to play him at least in an advisory position, right? Hey. Got to be in there, or flash forward or something. He needs to be in the film one more time, because he is not reunited with Short Round, and we want to see Short Round fresh off his Oscar. He wants to see Short Round fresh off his Oscar win with Indiana Jones again. I think it has to happen.
Okay.
I think we've never been to Atlantis. We've never, hey, maybe in this one, Indiana Jones could go to the Phantom Menace. Maybe he could, if he finally dies, he will know the great unknown, and we can watch him walk up to the pearly gates. There's supernatural things that we could do.
So
with
many
him
places they could go. I know. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think they're going to wait until Harrison Ford passes, and give it time, and then at some point they're going to reboot with a new young actor who's going to just embody the role perfectly, and everyone's going to love him. And they're going to do either a series or a movie. I like the idea of the spy series. I think that'd be cool to see Indiana Jones as a spy. I would love that aspect of it. But it's tough to, you know, it's really tough to envision someone else in the role until they do it. And you're like, oh, okay. Because Star Trek's doing it all over the place. I hate to be a broken record about Star Trek, but they're taking these roles by, you know, Captain Kirk and Uhura and all these quote unquote iconic roles. Everyone made a big deal out of it when Chris Pine did it in that first Star Trek movie. Or when they did it, rather, they recast those. Now they're just doing it all the time. So it's like, get somebody else in there, have them do it, come up with something new. People who grew up with it can create something that is in the spirit of the original, but still really, really good. And I think it'll be better content than what we've got here. This is like, this is it. This is and this is good. It's a fitting end to this chapter in Indiana Jones. But I'm looking forward to whatever comes next. And I think it's something that we have not had a lot of content. There's only five movies and one brief TV series. There's not a lot out there.
No, there isn't. And okay, so I was thinking about this. Is Indiana Jones the American James Bond?
Yes.
Is
or
there
Tom
any
Cruise? Tom Cruise would like to be.
He would like to be, but is like. Ethan, you can't have the name Ethan and be the American James Bond. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I think Indiana Jones embodies more of the American spirit, the adventure and the right. I don't know what I'm doing and I'm going to figure it out as I go and all that stuff. That's Indiana Jones.
Yeah. So if he's the American James Bond, then I think, like, I hate to say anybody should play the role other than Harrison Ford. I hate it. And probably Harrison Ford would hate it too, that talk. But if he is the American James Bond, I think that's a good argument to, you can change actors and.
Well, that's what they've been doing, right?
We'll all go along with it. Oh, by the way, did you see the last James Bond? Do you know what I'm talking about when I say I hated the last James Bond, the ending?
I can't refresh my memory. I think I did see it.
It's the last Daniel Craig film.
Yeah. James Bond. But did what is it? I think so. Who's the bad guy? They all blend together.
It's Freddie Mercury from Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes, I did see that one. Yes.
Rami Malek. Sorry.
Yes, I did see it. Yeah.
Okay.
But the other guy was in it too, wasn't he? The other guy from the last movie was in it briefly, I think.
What guy?
The bad guy from the last one. Anyway, go ahead.
Right. Okay. I thought James Bond was whoever they chose to play James Bond was just going to show up. That movie is like, no. Now, if we have an actor with a big ego, spoiler alert, if we have an actor with a big ego and that actor wants to say goodbye to the fans, then that actor can die. James Bond can die in a James Bond film.
So what happened
that's
at the end?
That's shit. Yeah.
I don't remember.
Shit. He's standing up on the top of his
bunker.
And the missiles hit him.
Yeah, and he blows
so there's
up.
No, So
there's
that
no mistaking that he's dead. Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah,
okay. That little biatch of a villain somehow kills James Bond. I was like, this, no, James Bond cannot die. James Bond is an idea. James Bond, an idea that doesn't die. Like, that's how I feel about it. Now,
yeah.
And I think in England, everybody agrees with me because James Bond is like the biggest action anything that's ever existed in England. I think Indiana Jones might be the same. I think Indiana Jones cannot die. I don't think so. I don't think you can kill Indiana Jones. I think Indiana Jones is an idea.
And you might be right.
Must live on. Like, if they would have killed him in this film, I think, once again, I just don't think it would work. I don't think it would be, I think people would, it would just bum people out.
Yeah, and I think that by the same token, the ending where they left him in the past and just gone back and not known what would have happened to him, it still would have bummed people out. Like, who wants to live? Like, I'm sure he would have been happy for a while studying ancient Greece and living there, but I don't know if he would have been happy. So coming home, he was supposed to be running away from all that stuff. He didn't want to face the grief of dealing with the loss of his son and his wife. And she seemed to indicate, it was interesting, actually, my girlfriend made this observation at the end when she says, I've been told you're back. Are you back? Which means that he wasn't, like, he had maybe, like, he talked about her being distant, but also he probably was as well.
He was detached. Happened,
right?
Yeah, he was
they both were, right? And that's what happens when you lose a child. So, you know, that was all very satisfying. It was a good ending, I thought.
I also like, I didn't think of it at the time, but they give him a clock for his retirement gift. And I love that perfect tie-in with the rest of the film. And he gives it to a homeless guy or whatever on his way out of the building, which I like, which I like too. And I was like, oh, that's like, talk about a power move on your last day at work. Here's your gift. Thanks. You give it away on your way out of the door. Like, I just love that. And I think, sort of the showing us the difference between a useless utensil that he's got and a piece of history, which he wants. Now, I looked it up, and it turns out Archimedes died, like, shortly after the siege of Syracuse, drawing his circles, whatever. Like, he was going to get arrested, and he said, "Let me finish. Don't touch my circles," or something was his final words.
Because he was designing the Dial of Destiny? Is that what they were saying?
Okay. Right. So it ties into the real history of the thing. And if they would have left Indiana Jones behind, we could have had a scene where he was happy in his robes and whatever, studying the archaeology before it's archaeology and the history of the place. And that could have been very cool. But I think it's not as cool as Karen Allen walks through the door.
That was great. That made me feel awesome. Yeah. I love seeing her. And it makes me want, I wish, and I said in my review of Crystal Skull, it's like, she's one of the only good things in Crystal Skull, because she should have been in the movies more. I wish she was in the other movies, right? She's just very good.
Yeah, we missed her in those other two.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it that we expected to see and wanted her to show up in those, and she did not.
Yeah.
So getting her a couple more times in the first, she's now in half of them or whatever, or a little more than half. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, well, so there you go. So overall, good reviews. Are you gonna rate? We want to rate it or what? Ooh. I don't care about that stuff. But
well, I said it would never touch the first trilogy. So I think it comes after that. Like it's more solid. And I'm actually very excited to see it again.
Yeah, I think I'm sure there'll be stuff that I didn't notice the first time around, and I am looking forward to watching it again as well. But in the comfort of my own home, not in a theater with people talking next to me.
I want to pause it once in a while too, because I think there's quite a bit going on in some of those scenes that I wasn't quite able to take it all in. Plus, I was in like that row that's a little uncomfortably close.
Okay,
like, you're far away, but you're not like about halfway into the Grand Park Theater, but it's still a little too close. So I definitely want to see it again, but it's I don't know. Do you have a mark? Do you got a mark for it out of 10?
Six.
Oh, you're gonna give it a 6 only.
Seven. Give it a 7.
I go. It's a tough one for me, because all the haters online make me say 9 out of 10. Haters, 9 out of 10. I don't care. Screw you. If I'm reviewing it compared to other Indiana Jones, then it's more like a 7, you know, 7.5. I mean, I enjoyed the hell out of it, right?
Yeah. And maybe you have to watch it again to really get a sense of it. So let's leave it there.
B plus, but if you're, everyone else is saying it's a disaster. I hate it. I saw an article that says the reason the film isn't doing as well is because no one gives a shit about Indiana Jones. And that makes me give it 10 out of 10. One more little piece of trivia, bringing back to the beginning of our conversation from Hollywood Reporter. 42% of tickets to Indiana Jones, the current movie, went to people age 45 and older. 23% were 55 and older. That's a breakdown rarely seen when it comes to a Hollywood summer tentpole. So it is skewing older, and it is skewing male by the Hollywood Reporter standards. But that's also an indication that the film is bringing in an audience that doesn't normally go on opening weekend, which is an opportunity. Mm-hmm. So it's not, I don't think it's all bad news. And I think the film is doing better on the weekday showings than what people thought it would.
Like I said, Wednesday evening, pretty full theater. So I think that's a win for theaters as far as this film is concerned. All right, let's finish up with some recommendations. What do you have for me? You go first this time.
The Diplomat on Netflix with Kerry Russell. Yes, it's a surprise. And I got this recommendation from all people, from Michael Moore, who did a podcast where he was like, you should stream these shows because it's the writer's strike. I've got time. I got time to binge. So he listed 20 shows. I'd seen 19 of them except for The Diplomat.
Okay.
So I started watching it. And to my surprise, it's a lovely, I think I'm on episode 5 of 8 episodes.
Okay.
And it's enjoyable. It's like a political, it's funny. It's almost like an update of The West Wing in some ways. It's Michael McKean is in it, I didn't know he was in it in a major role. Rufus Sewell, who I haven't seen in a movie for some time, is playing a very comical role as Kerry Russell's husband, and she is a diplomat thrown into being a diplomat. And there's all kinds of stuff happening in this show. But once again, it goes down easy. It's fun. You forget you're watching Kerry Russell after the first 10 minutes of the show. So I recommend The Diplomat on Netflix.
Okay, I'll check that out. I'm going to recommend Nope, which is on Crave, which is the latest Jordan Peele movie. Have you seen it?
I have not seen Nope, but I've seen scenes from Nope, so I think I know a little bit about it.
Well, it's best, if you go in not knowing anything with these films. Like, it's, Jordan Peele's third movie after Get Out and Us. Is that what the second one was called? Yeah. Us? Something like that? Anyway, I like those as well. He's a good filmmaker. And again, great characters, great acting, great backstory to these characters. It gives them like this kind of meaty things that happened to them in the past. And there's these weird flashbacks. But at its part, it's like the unseen monster kind of a story. Like, what are you going to do about this unseen monster? And it's just really well paced and very easy to understand and comes together really well. So, and I had no idea where it was going to go. I would say it wins best use of the title in the movie. When they always say the name of the movie, when Nope is said, it's at the exact moment it should be said. And I almost said it. I'm like, okay. Nope. So that's like, exactly what you think it's going to be. But it's also a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, Nope. Check it out.
Cool. Planet of the Apes, when the little ape goes, no. I think that's the first word the ape says, right? In the first one? In the reboot? Yeah, that's good.
All right, there we go. That's going to do it for this episode of the Media Nerds. I'm Dan Vadebonker.
I'm Kenton Larson. Don't let the door hit you in the ass.